You don't stop needing information just because you left the car. That's why News Radio 92.3 goes with you. On your phone, on your computer, wherever you are. Stream us live or download the News Radio 92.3 app. Stay connected to local news, breaking updates, and conversations that matter, even when you're not near a radio.
And that's a good thing.
It's News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Football season kicking off, a growing legal showdown. Should pro athletes be allowed to play the college game? Daquan Wright, Xavier Harris, and Blake Cotton all briefly joined NFL team training camps this summer. But now, the former pros want to return to college football, reportedly at Louisiana State University. LSU's head football coach defending the idea.
If it makes your team better, and it's legal to do, and your players want it, I'll take the hit publicly for it, because that's my job.
But LSU's critics calling for a flag on the play.
I think this is a really interesting story because you have these, and I will confess, okay, I still feel like some of the details here and the nuances I have not tracked it carefully enough. But the gist of the question is, players who still have eligibility in college, which is 4 years, or if you redshirt freshman, it means you don't play, then it's kind of like you have 5 years, right? And they have unused eligibility in NCAA sports. They go pro or try to go pro in, let's say, their junior year, so they have a year left. They don't get a degree, I'm imagining, okay, but let's imagine that's the case. So they leave school, they go try in the NFL, they go to camp, and they get cut. So they were in college in May. Okay. They were playing in December. They go try it out for the NFL, and now it didn't work out for them, but they've still got a year. They could go back to school basically like right now and play, be working on their degree that they didn't finish, and be competitive in a team that if they had not left, they would be able to keep playing at, right? Again, If I got any of the details wrong, please correct me, but I think that's the basic situation that we're in. I mean, we're not talking about people who, it's not like, the folks who played in the NBA and then retired and they're going to join the WNBA. We're not talking about people who have been in the NFL for like 6 years and now they're going back to school and they want to play because they have a year of eligibility. Although technically, if they still did, okay, we're talking about people who could not do it in the NFL. They weren't good enough for the NFL. So are they huge difference makers on, the college football field? Well, probably, because compared to most college players, they're better than most of them. That's why they tried to go to the NFL. Didn't work out. So, hey, I tried, I went and gave a shot at a better job. Turns out I wasn't good enough. And, oh, by the way, if I come back and play college now, maybe I get another year of seasoning. Maybe I get another year working out. Maybe I get another year of learning the game better. And I'm actually able to get an NFL career later on as a result of it. Now, you can have a conversation about what the rule should be and whether it should disqualify those folks, but I'm kind of where Lane Kiffin's at. I mean, these players are eligible legally. I'm going to let them play. What would be the reason not to? Steve Sarkisian from Texas.
The fact that somebody out there is going to take a player on off of an NFL roster and tell somebody who's been doing it for 9 months, go kick rocks, that morally is wrong.
Well, I mean, maybe. But as you all know in sport, the issue is what does the rule say, not what does ethics say? Now, as an ethicist, I generally believe that you ought to play sports better than the rules force you to play. But is it unethical? Especially since, again, the players seem to be not people who have been in the NFL, but people who kind of halfway tried and didn't make it, and they were just out of college anyway. Dabo Swinney from Clemson.
I don't blame the kids.
I
don't blame the kids and people trying to take advantage of the system. I just think it's embarrassing where we are with college football.
And as somebody rightly points out on the text line, the name, image, and likeness dollars have completely changed the landscape of college sports. And I'm sure that for some of these players, they figure, A, I can't get an NFL contract. B, if I go back to school, I can definitely build a brand on social media and make a pile of money that way, or at least some off of football. And I'll be getting a degree. And aren't we always saying these kids ought to be getting their degrees? I don't know. If the rules allow it, I think I side with Lane and LSU, which I don't think I've ever said that in my entire life. Something just make you uncomfortable. 6:15 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. The Transgressors Memorial Service comes up next. Find out what Brother Andrew thinks of the Lake America rebrand, CBC refusing to call 9/11 terrorism, and Pringles dippers? Well, you'll have to listen next to find out. PJ has traffic on the fives.
Still working that vehicle crash in Roblox, East Johnson Avenue at Chisholm Road in Pensacola. Also have a vehicle crash at I-10 westbound right near 9 Mile. Use caution through that area. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Managing your ECUA service is easier. The new My ECUA mobile app puts everything you need right at your fingertips. From paying your bill, submitting service requests, and reporting issues like missed collections, damaged or lost bins, water main breaks, and sewer overflows, it's all right there in one easy-to-use app. Take control of your services anytime, anywhere. So download My ECUA. It's available in the App Store and Google Play.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation, an irregular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. In a clinical study, Eliquis apixaban reduces stroke risk and has less major bleeding than warfarin.
Don't stop prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. Stroke risk may increase. Eliquis can cause serious and potentially fatal bleeding. Don't take if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or bleed longer. A spinal injection increases blood clot risk, which may cause paralysis. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding or bruising, or back pain, tingling, numbness, muscle weakness, or incontinence. Aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
Ask your doctor about the number one cardiologist prescribed blood thinner, Eliquis.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Friday, beginning at 5:30, enjoy the celebration of local art in downtown Pensacola during First Friday's Art Walk. Explore local art galleries, live music, refreshments, while supporting and celebrating local artists. See visitpensacola.com for more. Check out the end of summer finds at the Palafox Market, Saturdays from 9 till 2. Experience why Palafox Market was named Best Farmers Market by Southern Living Magazine. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin, weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
It doesn't happen very often, but this week we have a chance to enjoy an all-praise ceremony, Gaialuya. First, for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's recent adoption of an official policy discouraging the use of words terrorist attack for the September 11th incident 25 years ago. As CBC Public Affairs Director Carrie Kelly, she, her, explained, it is the practice of the CBC to exercise extreme caution before using the words terrorist and terrorism. Well said, eh? As the internal memo to all staff said, do not refer to the September 11th attacks as terrorist attacks. Rather, reporters should refer to the events as, quote, hijackings that led to passenger jet crashes. But don't call it terrorism. There's just so much to praise here. First of all, the CBC has clearly now internalized what we've been saying for decades. One non-gender-specific person's terrorist is another non-gender-specific person's freedom fighter. And since referring to the Quran-based freedom fighters who liberated control of the jetliners that day from the imperialist pilots as terrorists, or even hijackers, is prejudicial to the legitimacy of their political goals, we should refrain from using such language. As you well know, the 19 enhanced community organizers who orchestrated the airplane-based protest were motivated by the fact that America is the great Satan and deserves to be attacked for all the evil it's done here and abroad. We, of course, totally agree, believing that America is a sexist, racist, homophobic land of systemic hatred and oppression. Obviously, we realize that the mostly peaceful Muslims of 9/11 were themselves racist, sexist, homophobes, but they hate America almost as much as we do. So, the enemy of my enemy becomes my friend. As a result, it is important not to inappropriately frame their political demonstration that unalived 3,000 people as terrorism, since that might make people not take their objectives seriously. Also, since we know Muslims are basically harmless, a fact confirmed by the total lack of bloodshed in their history, anything that provokes them to actual violence must certainly have been the fault of the people they killed. But since we are talking about the politically correct way to relabel a major homicide incident, note I did not call it mass murder, perhaps it's time to change the way we describe other historical events that have been inappropriately labeled as terrorism. The Olympic Village killings of 1972, often called the Munich Massacre, can now be called the Munich Manslaughter, or maybe the Palestinian protest homicides. Pearl Harbor can be relabeled as the preemptive Japanese unalivings of 1941. The Oklahoma City bombing could be described as Timothy McVeigh conducting a vigorous redress of grievances against the federal government. And the first and second Palestinian intifadas can just be called the periods of accelerated Jewish population adjustment, similar to how we might describe what took place in Germany in the 1940s. You see, it's very easy to find neutral language to underdescribe major atrocities so that people can draw their own conclusions about whether the mass life shortening of innocent people is a legitimate political tactic or not. Far be it from the CBC or anyone else to cast aspersions on the legitimacy of anyone's political cause or tactics by, you know, accurately labeling them. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, let's discuss Lake America. Now, I know this one's going to be a little hard to hear since this whole episode was the pure invention of President He Who Shall Never Be Named. Nevertheless, let's recognize that even though he appears to be working against our interests in general, the name changing first of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America and now of Lake Ontario to Lake America shows that President Nope is actually working inadvertently on our side. As you know, he's only renamed a few things, the Department of War, Mount McKinley, Fort Bragg, etc., whereas we have accomplished hundreds of renamings with our efforts over the years. But precisely because he is willing to do name changes, he has granted the entire project of right naming full legitimacy. Plus, by exposing his own supporters as hypocrites for standing against the renaming of the Redskins, the Indians, Aunt Jemima, and Uncle Ben, for instance, but then siding with him for the very silly Americanization of the Gulf and the Lake, he's actually done us a favor. We never again need to take seriously those heretics who think changing names is not a valid practice or, as we consider it, a holy sacrament. They embraced the president's weird hydronyms, and now they're stuck accepting all of the name shifts that we bring as well. So even though it's ridiculous to make these particular and petty label changes, as long as Orange Man is normalizing the changing of names, he's advocating our cause. Besides, we can always undo this later, further contributing to both referential confusion and the pervasive geographic ignorance of American students who must surely have no idea what anything is actually named anymore right now. However, you should be prepared that President No Way We Say It is going to bring forward more name changes. Here are some we expect. Canadian whiskey will probably become American whiskey, even if it's made in Canada. Canadian geese will become Donald Ducks. Canadian bacon will simply become ham, or perhaps ham of America. We actually do expect he'll change Atlantic and Pacific Oceans to American Ocean East and American Ocean West. Tacos, enchiladas, empanadas, and burritos will soon be called simply American Cooking South. Not to be confused with Southern Cooking, obviously. Lake Erie and Lake Huron will probably become Lake America 2 and Lake America 3. Lake Michigan might stay, but certainly Lake Superior will become Lake Bigliest or Lake Huge. And since the Spanish refused to cooperate with his outrageous war against Iran, parts of Florida will soon be required to say that their trees are covered with American moss. In any case, you get the point. Lots of changes are coming, but we can reverse them all with the next presidency. And for now, rejoice with us in Lake America's new identity. For Gaia's sake, stop deadnaming her as Lake Ontario. She has transitioned, and we wholeheartedly celebrate the changing of things for the sake of changing things. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, this week's patchouli oil rubbed cedarwood tambourine of justice with Mylar synthetic drumhead, obviously not animal skin, three tassels, goes to the fine thought leaders at Pringles for their transparent lid-shattering invention of Pringles Dippers. Yes, after 58 years of frustration anytime we tried to use what Procter & Gamble originally marketed as Pringles newfangled potato chips in 1968 to pick up some salsa or French onion dip or nacho cheese sauce, what was the end result? Disappointed taste buds, thwarted life goals, and a Humpty Dumpty-like crime scene of shattered Pringles shards laying impotently in whatever dip you had intended to pick up with them when they were still intact. As everyone knows, you just can't dip a Pringle. But now the food entrepreneurs at Mars have done something spectacular. They've created a new treat which is slightly thicker than the original Pringle, has light corrugation for structural enhancement, and comes in three flavors. Now, I know you might be asking yourself, what sort of a loon would ever even want to use dip on a Pringle since the snacks are perfect as is and in no need of adornment? How dare you criticize someone else's lifestyle choices? Have you learned nothing from us all these years? We are an inclusive congregation here, ladies and gentlemen and neithers. But just think of how delightfully this innovation smudges the distinctions between existing types of food. These new snacks with the look of corduroy knee patches made of potatoes instead of cotton aren't really like ridged potato chips, and they aren't really like Pringles either. They're something entirely new. They're confusing, they're unusual, and they're weird. They're transchipular. Depending on your view, they're either Ruffles that identify as Pringles or Pringles that identify as Ruffles, but either way, they're most definitely non-binary. You might even say they are potato fluid, sitting quite comfortably in the conceptual gray space between being identified chip at birth and being identified Pringle at birth. And for challenging potato norms and breaking down the walls of those little foil-lined cylinder sleeves, literally the separate but equal silos of the snack world, we are thrilled. Of course, you realize that Pringles themselves have for over a decade been the official potato snack of the people of the Holy Acronym String. Not because of their flavor or texture or compulsive edibility, but because they refuse traditional labels, just like we do. Pringles aren't potato chips, despite the original marketing push. Rather than being fried slices of any potato, Pringles are technically an extruded snack made into a saddle-shaped delicacy from a starchy seasoned potato mash. Their very existence challenges the French fry or chip potato snack binary. If you were to start with an uncooked gnocchi, press it into a curve and flash fry it, that'd be a Pringle. Certainly neither chip nor fry. So for historically thwarting the man-made boundaries of artificially imposed food categories, we have always celebrated Pringles, which have now officially become the theyest of all chips. A protrusion here, an indentation there, both thicker in one sense and thinner in another, and all with that completely unique texture and taste. An individual, identical to all the other individuals in the sleeve, just like the letters of the Holy Acronym String. Different, but very, very same. Well done, Pringles. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
627 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. PJ has traffic on the fives.
Still working that vehicle crash in roadblock, East Johnson Avenue at Chisholm Road in Pensacola. Also have an object in the roadway, I-10 westbound, just before you get to 9 Mile Road. Also have a vehicle crash, I-10 westbound, right at 9 Mile Road. Use caution. I'm PJ with the traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. If you need a roof or aren't sure if you need a roof because you need a repair, but you're not sure how extensive the damage is, what the cost is, whether it makes more sense to do it now, do it later, that's why you ask an expert. And Quality Roofing Solutions, they're the experts. For 20 years, Brian Ward and his folks have been basically repairing and rebuilding roofs. They do 90-95% new roofs. About 5-10% is repairs, but they do some. 10,000 times since 2006, they've put in roofs. They currently offer a lifetime workmanship warranty on the roofs, which is amazing. Like, who else does that? They have a 4.9 rating on Google because they're so well-liked. And basically, their model is, let's do what we're supposed to do. Let's talk to people. Let's be straight with them. Let's not condescend to them. Let's not treat them like they don't know. When they have questions, let's answer them and not act irritated. Like, let's just do all the right stuff. And, you know, all kinds of other things, like having vans that run around between the warehouse, which is here, and the job site, you know, and making sure that everybody has their stuff in time, on time. They basically scan in and out things that they might need from the van. It's another form of efficiency that helps them to cut costs and make sure that they're doing exactly right by you, the customer, and that's what matters. I have a good friend who did her roof because she heard me talking about them, and she said they weren't the cheapest. We compared several bids. They weren't the cheapest, but they certainly weren't the most expensive, but they did what they're supposed to do, and I was satisfied. And then three or four other people on her road did the exact same thing. QualityRoofingSolutions.com, 777-0961. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning. Two workers have been rescued alive from a hydropower tunnel in Nepal. This is 9 days now after those devastating floods that killed over 1,200 people, left thousands missing.
How many people got rescued?
Two people have been rescued from this tunnel. And they were 30 and 45 years old. They were pulled from the Trishuli 3A hydropower project and flown to a hospital. Now, the rescuers, though, also say voices from other workers could still be heard inside the tunnel, so there could be more rescues here.
That's just what you were talking about yesterday, is people caught in air pockets might still be alive. And can you imagine, you know, all the thousands of people who are working on this, you know, most of them experience disappointment and don't find anybody. But the hope it gives them for those few who did find somebody, what a reinvigoration.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
There's still 900 people that are missing that were working on hydropower projects across Nepal. So.
And like 100 Americans, right? Somewhere in that vicinity?
Yes, I believe so.
All right.
That sounds about right. And President Trump has named Adam Tell as the new acting Army Secretary after the resignation of Dan Driscoll. Tell is the Army's Assistant Secretary for Civil Works and previously worked for Republican senators in the White House.
Yeah, a lot of, let's just say, unclarity around exactly why the former Secretary of the Army resigned, and a very high number of turnovers at the Pentagon under Pete Hegseth.
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley. One holdout juror in the Lindsey Clancy murder trial. Judge William Sullivan holds an inquiry this morning about the jury's note that the person is refusing to listen to the law. But the judge rejected defense lawyer Kevin Reddington's motion to remove the juror.
I object to the court's ruling. I request that we have further inquiry. I request that my motion is to remove this juror that refuses to listen to your instruction on reasonable doubt.
Judge Sullivan said it would be improper to side with the 11 or the 1 going into day 7. And deliberating whether Clancy had control when she killed her three children. Miraculous survival in Nepal. Two workers rescued from a hydropower tunnel 9 days after the glacier let loose epic flooding that killed 1,300. Labor Day weekend gas prices up about a nickel from last month. AAA at $4.14 a gallon. National average for regular. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got partly cloudy skies right now, 75 degrees, and we'll get a look at our forecast from Channel 3 up in just a couple of minutes. Representative Michelle Salzman says while license plate readers have proven useful for law enforcement, privacy concerns surrounding them are worth taking seriously. The cameras capture a vehicle's license plate, location, and description. Critics worry that data could be misused or potentially accessed without the proper oversight.
There are some really valid questions about, you know, are we abusing our power? Are we encroaching on your privacy? Those are good questions to ask, and I think if we created some parameters around that, that it might be a healthy tool.
Salzman tells Channel 3 she supports agencies pausing their programs while the state works out clearer guidelines. Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves says he backs Police Chief Eric Winstrom's decision to pause the city's program as well. Fort Walton Beach Police say their cameras not on state property are going to remain active, at least for now. Two men are facing trafficking charges after Escambia County deputies say they found more than 2,000 grams of fentanyl in their car during a traffic stop this week in the Wedgwood area.
Who's in the car? Two people. This fella, Ramon Becerra Uribe. He was in the car. He's 25 years old, and he's also in the country illegally. So he's been charged with trafficking in fentanyl, but also being in our country illegal. His cohort was this guy, Adrian Medina Ortiz. He's 25 years old, and he was also charged with trafficking.
Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons there, and he says the stop began as a routine tag violation, and then a canine alerted deputies that there were drugs in the vehicle. Deputies also found nearly $23,000 in cash. The sheriff says with the amount of drugs found, it could have potentially caused more than 1 million overdose deaths. A Milton man's facing charges about 10 months now after a fatal hit and run on Old Baghdad Highway. Jared Christian Phelps was arrested Earlier this week, officials say that Phelps left the scene after his SUV struck and killed a female pedestrian back in November. He's being held in the Santa Rosa County Jail on charges of leaving the scene of a crash involving death. NFL Hall of Famer Emmitt Smith is facing a lawsuit accusing him of misusing $2.5 million borrowed from a Native American tribal economic development arm for a renewable energy project. Smith is a minority investor in Pensacola's Reverb by Hard Rock development at Maritime Park. Local officials say the lawsuit will not affect the local project, as the Dawson Company and corporate contractors are the ones officially tied to city agreements. Construction is expected to begin once the Blue Wahoos wrap up their season in October. A trial's been pushed back to mid-October for a Molino man facing multiple federal charges, including sex trafficking, prostitution, and money laundering. 28-year-old Javier Cyree Terrell Brown is accused of running a multi-year trafficking operation using interstate travel and digital payment apps to move illicit proceeds. Prosecutors say the alleged offenses date back to 2023. Brown faces up to 15 years in federal prison if convicted. He remains in custody without bond at the Santa Rosa County Jail. It's 6:35 at News Radio. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with PJ.
Still working that vehicle crash in Roblock, East Johnson Avenue at Chisholm Road in Pensacola. Use caution there. Also have a vehicle crash I-10 westbound right at 9 Mile Road. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives. Back to you.
We do have a 70% chance of your showers and thunderstorms today. Otherwise, partly cloudy skies with a high near 89 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 75. For Saturday, 70% chance of your showers and thunderstorms, high near 92. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 75. Heading into your Sunday, 60% chance of rain with a high near 91 degrees. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 74. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, we've got 75 degrees with partly cloudy skies. Your next news in 30 minutes and breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
We do have a 70%.
I'm Dom Savino with Your Money Now. The world's biggest sovereign wealth fund is planning to cut its holdings of government bonds as it tries to make greater returns. The proposed changes from Norway's enormous wealth fund would most affect its holdings of U.S. treasuries. It comes at a very sensitive time for American government bonds. Long-dated yields, like the 10-year and 30-year treasury, are at decade highs. Car safety regulators have opened an audit of about 1,000 Tesla vehicles, headlining one of the carmaker's new initiatives. Officials are taking a closer look at the technical data Tesla used to claim its two-seater cyber cabs comply with federal safety standards. The cyber cabs debuted in Austin, Texas yesterday, the latest step in Tesla's robo-taxi service. On Wall Street, futures are mixed, with investors waiting on the federal government's monthly jobs report. It's expected to continue what's been a trend of slow job growth this summer. But still, stocks are on pace to post another winning week. That's Your Money Now.
Man, I love this place. I've been surfing here since I was a kid. Now, seeing my grandson out on the water, it means everything to me. Watching him and taking in the blue waves, the sea breeze, the blurry horizon?
If you have geographic atrophy, or GA, subtle changes in vision could mean it's progressing toward irreversible vision loss. IZERVAY is proven to slow GA progression and could help preserve your vision for longer, so you may keep seeing the world around you. IZERVAY, or Avastin Captid Pegol, is an eye injection. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. IZERVAY can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. IZERVAY may cause blood in the white of the eye, blurred vision, or a temporary increase in eye pressure. Do not drive or use machinery until vision has recovered after an eye injection or exam. Ask your retina specialist how you can slow your GA with IZERVAY. To learn more, call 1-855-IZERVAY or go to IZERVAY.com. Paid for by Astellas Pharma.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Each Sunday at 7:30 a.m., the Bible Baptist Bookstore of Pensacola, Florida brings you Theological Seminar with teacher Peter S. Ruckman, founder and president of the Pensacola Bible Institute. He will teach you what the Bible says about the subject, not merely what it is presumed to teach.
Tune in this Sunday at 7:30 a.m. for Theological Seminar with Dr. Peter S. Ruckman, brought to you by Bible Baptist Bookstore on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
That time of year again, hurricane season. News Radio 92.3 provides informative, local, and dependable coverage to make sure you're informed of any major storms coming to our area. Before a storm, we keep you informed of the storm's track, where food and gas shortages occur, and where you can get sandbags. During the storm, we stay on the air to let you know where the storm is headed, where power outages occur, road closures, and other storm warnings. Then after the storm, we get you the information to help you recover from the storm and help your neighbors. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable hurricane headquarters.
I do not want to admit it, but it is certainly true that I know the words to this song.
Now, walk in.
All right. 639 News Radio 92.3. Good callback on that one, PJ. I appreciate it. It's a perfect setup for us to talk about drainage issues in Gulf Breeze. I don't know. Here we are. Hey, it's live radio. You never know what's going to happen. All right. So Patrick, and I think his name is Jay Lee, and I'm sorry if I've mispronounced it. But he is a project engineer, working with the city of Gulf Breeze on the Gilmore Drainage Basin. Now, I know this is very specific and localized to the people who live right in that area on the western end of the peninsula, but I thought some of the stuff that they were talking about in this presentation, I thought it was very interesting for understanding what are solutions, what are not solutions, how does storm drains work, you know, like just, again, we are licensed to the city of Gulf Breeze as a station. That means we are obligated by federal law to serve their needs and report on their issues. But I think it's interesting for everybody as well. So this is, again, Patrick Jaley talking about the four options that they are proposing for this portion of stormwater in Gulf Breeze.
When we got into alternatives, we studied, man, I can't tell you how many we studied, a bunch of them. But what you're going to hear about tonight are four alternatives. And I want to set the stage. Alternatives 1 through 3 are effectively a phased implementation of one large solution. So alternate 2 builds on alternate 1, alternate 3 builds on alternate 2. And then you've got an outlier, if you will, alternate 4, which frankly wasn't even part of our scope when we got into it, but we thought it was worthy of consideration. And it's really answering the question, okay, if the best solution hydraulically was what's already been designed, it was just too expensive, is there anything we could do to try to manage that cost a little bit better, lessen the impacts from construction, that type of thing?
So what happened was the city had sold off some property to FDOT in the construction of the new bridge and some easement stuff, and they'd gained about $6 million that they had then turned around and used a significant chunk of that for storm drain projects in the east and central and west basin. The problem was the west basin, that's where Gilmore is, it's almost to the west end of the peninsula, was so expensive that they really couldn't do anything with it. They've got money, but not enough to do the what we'd really like to do project. So now, having done a lot of east and central basin improvements, they're coming back and working on the west basin stuff and, you know, looking at it again and seeing what they can do. And so they've hired McKim and Creed, and Patrick Jaley, the engineer, is in giving them the recommendation. As you heard him say, 1 through 3 is a layered approach. We can do 1, 1+2, 1+3, 1, 2, and 3. You know, like, that's good. Okay, that's good stewardship. You can decide how much you want to spend. And then 4 is like a completely wingnut crazy if we had an unlimited budget what we would do. But there's a reason he brought it up, and it's interesting. So step 1.
So alternate 1, casually referred to as the Gilmore pump station upgrade, is just what it sounds like. You're a upgraded station, meaning a bigger wet well, bigger pumps, bigger force main, effectively in the locations that they are right now. Similarly, a force main discharge out to Eufaula.
Okay, so you've got on this street that runs sort of northwest to southeast, and at the south end, it discharges to Eufaula. At the north end, you know, you'd have to go out to the north side of the sound, and some places are a little bit farther away, but okay. There are, you know, pump stations and there's drainage, and it's like, think about a sump pump in your basement, which if you're not from the Midwest, maybe you don't know, but you know, if you have flooding in your basement, you dig a well in sort of a hole in your basement. Water drains into that hole, and then you have a pump that pumps it outside and goes somewhere else. That's basically what you have on Gilmore, as I understand it. You've got these, you know, areas of depression, water flows into them, and the pump pumps out. What's the problem? Well, pumps failed, although these don't normally, but also it can only handle so much. And if a storm event is more water than that, well, they get overwhelmed and they can't continue doing what they can only do what they can do, right? So this would upgrade that current system, which that's good, okay? What else?
When you look at the 2- and 5-year storms, think of these as the ones that happen, you know, every day. We've had them probably 3 times in the last week with some of these thunder cells that roll through here, right? A pump can keep up with that level of event, okay? A pump, you turn it on, it spins as hard as it can, pushes as hard as it can. It can do a pretty good job up to a limit, and that is represented in these lower intensity storms. You see what I would characterize as a significant, you know, 75% reduction in total flooded area. When you get up into the higher intensity storm events, the 10-year, the 25-year, the effectiveness of that pump is simply overwhelmed by the amount of water. So does it improve conditions? Sure it does. Does it make a dramatic improvement? Not to the degree that a gravity-driven solution would.
And that's the alternative is gravity, which is where the water flows on its own, going downhill as water does, as opposed to being pumped out somewhere, taking advantage of gravity to bring it to the pump and then using the pump to discharge it somewhere else, which is obviously can only do as much as the pump can do. Gravity can only do as much as the pipes can carry as well, but gravity doesn't depend on anything else. And if you build a little bit bigger, can handle more. So again, he's the engineer for this. And what was step number 2? Okay. And I think I have a note in here. It says Jolly. I may be saying his last name wrong, but Patrick Jolly. Anyway, he said the pump station and an upgraded outfall plus another pond.
Okay, so remember, step 2 is building on step 1, so you're still going to see the Gilmore pump station. You're still going to see its upgraded outfall. What alternate 2 does is extend the system to include the troubled area around the Baptist Church there. So they do have a stormwater management pond right there. It's effectively a formal pond in the bottom of a hole. It takes as much water as it can take, and then it just kind of that area. It fills up, exceeds the banks, maybe causes some nuisance flooding there in the roadway and property adjacent to that.
Okay, so working on improving that and doing what was done in step 1. We'll come back to this in a moment. Again, the reason I'm doing this, I know most of you don't live right on this street in Gulf Breeze, but the flooding issues they experience and the solutions that are available are very similar to the kinds of things that anybody anywhere with stormwater issues could face. And so I think grasping some of this is just, I don't know, it's useful to know what things, you know, go on in the world. PJ has traffic on the 5s.
Still working that vehicle crash in Roblox, East Johnson Avenue at Chisholm Hall Room. Oh, good grief.
He's just. You there, sir? How's it going?
In Pensacola. Also have a vehicle crash, I-10 westbound right near 9 Mile Road. I'm PJ with the traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, PJ. Pay attention to this next comment because I think, unless I'm misunderstanding, and I don't think I am, I think what you've got happening here was a really, really good moment of government in the past by some of the employees in Gulf Breeze who did something that only became useful in the future, and you'll see. I just think this is such a wonderful little note about how the city of Gulf Breeze government works.
This concept adds a pump station at the church pond, which is designated on that drawing. It runs a new force main up Gilmore and then down Fairpoint until you get to Barry, where the city has that city-owned parcel there at Barry. It's a new lift station there. And then it ties into a force main that is actually already in place and not in use, which kind of begs the question, how did we end up with that? Well, it was the foresight of the city and its engineer and its contractor. There was a need for dewatering during the septic to sewer conversion. Instead of just discharging to a filter bag and letting this water run all through the streets, a decision was made to invest in a force main, underground force main, that could be used for dewatering during that job. Now that that job is complete, that force main remains in place and serves as a perfect opportunity to reconnect for future stormwater improvements. So knowing that was there, we're taking advantage of it and discharging out to Gilmore Bayou.
This is such a great note. This, you know how government, you say, never plans ahead, government never prepares for the future, government is always catching up later to the... No, in this case, they literally planned ahead. When they were doing septic to sewer conversions, they had to have the ability to take care of excess water that would run off in that process, dewatering, as he called it, so they put in a force main. well, that project is over. They don't need it doesn't need to do anything. But what they knew was in the future, Gilmore's a drainage issue problem. Let's leave that pump in and they'll be able to use it in the future when they're willing to invest in, you know, dewatering is dewatering. Dewatering because of you know, something that you cause through working on septic sewer conversions. Dewatering during a storm event is still getting rid of water. And that one is going to push north up, you know, towards the outfall that's over on Berry Street and the property they have there. So two different pump stations, I understand it. I just thought it was a wonderful little note about how prior engineers in the city planned for future engineers to take advantage of something. Okay? They're also talking about putting in an underground water detention underneath the road, like Palafox has underwater or under road detention, a place to store it, and then it percolates down into the soil, which is a good way to process water. It doesn't have to go anywhere. And storing it under that it is good, especially since, like Palafox, they already had to tear it up to do, you know, to repair some things. This would be when they're tearing it up to do water, sewer, and gas work, they're going to create these under-road detention capabilities, which is another really good approach. We've already seen this work very well on Palafox.
Alternate 3 introduces some new gravity collection conveyance and disposal infrastructure as well. So if you think back to one of my earlier slides, everything runs north to south in this basin in general terms. And it all consolidates down there on Gilmore where that, you know, poor lonely pump station is trying to do the best that it can do.
My wife grew up right there. The low point of Gilmore.
That's right. So this alternate includes intercepting some of that flow. Let's stop it closer to its source instead of trying to fight it at its destination. It's kind of the way that we think about it.
So if you know you've got a detention basin or a pump station, you kind of build your water flow to go towards that so then it can be pumped out to a safe place into the Sound. What they're doing here is just kind of re-engineering it so the water doesn't even flow towards the pump. It would flow towards a different place. So you're now using gravity the way you want to use it normally if you didn't build a pump system. By the way, somebody corrected me and said it's Patrick Yaley. Thank you so much for the note. I appreciate that. I don't know the man. Sounds very capable, though. So, you know, that's going to use gravity to reverse the flow north to Berry Park instead of using it as it goes now down towards the pump station. Then the fourth option. So those are all the three. Those are all very what you might call standard options, but they're not, you know, massively wild wingnut solutions. Now comes solution number 4, microtunneling.
This alternate 4 introduces considerations of the same microtunneling technology that is proposed for the shoreline basin outfall. Microtunneling, just picture tunneling. See these, you know, Elon Musk and these guys driving whatever, 15, 25, 100-foot, however big they are, machines through the ground. Consider that macro tunneling, okay? This is the same type of technology, just on a smaller scale. I think by the book, micro tunneling might go up to like 10 or 12 feet, but we're talking about a 60-inch gravity pipe here.
So they're talking about drilling holes in Gulf Breeze from Gilmore to the perimeter, to the water. Swiss cheese. Drilling holes, lateral holes, through at a slight angle, making underground, you know, gutters that are going to run out, drainage, you know, that's going to run out to the Sound from the Gilmore drainage basin. It obviously, you know, it doesn't have to be a big slope, but that's what they're talking about. Drilling holes and putting pipe in so that you can drain the water that way. He says it's very popular in Europe. It's been used there for years. Hasn't been used much in the U.S., but it is part of a proposal they have for a shoreline project already in the works. And even though it's, you know, a little unknown to Americans, it's something that they put their reputation on.
We spent a considerable amount of time on the shoreline job vetting this microtunneling idea. Don't want to bring y'all something that's not going to pan out. It's not how we gain solid reputations as engineers. So we put in our due diligence then. I have confidence that it is a good solution. I have confidence that we've vetted it with contractors that know it outside of this market. And we have found pricing that we feel like substantiates this plan and level estimate.
So just like you can drill small holes to pull fiber through, you can drill bigger holes to push water through. Gravity will draw water through those and go from the area where it collects out to, you know, a natural disposal site off the land. And they already have this project on Shoreline. And if FEMA approves that project, they'll get a really good, like a hyper-accurate cost assessment of what it would take to drill the holes so they would know what's going to be involved. Because right now it's a little bit speculative. And he says it works extraordinarily well. Now, the one time where there's an issue is it will only work in regular rain events. It won't work when there's surge. Because if, think about this, if you drill a hole from Gilmore out to the water, then if there's storm surge and the water level rises by a couple of feet, it's going to do what? Tend to push back up the pipe, right? Which makes sense. So what do you do? If you have a home French drain, what do? You put a backflow preventer. It's a very simple thing, and they do exactly that so that the water can't push back up. But it's important to know that in a surge event, it will not drain water either. So there will still be standing water until the surge goes down and it can drain back out that hole. But he says, look, this works. You won't get the benefit during a surge, but you will get the benefit all the rest of the time. It is more expensive, but we'll know better about the cost if FEMA approves the project on Shoreline. So anyway, I just thought it was a really interesting discussion, that drilling of the holes laterally to basically create an underground discharge system. I'd never heard of that before. It may not be cost feasible for a lot of locations, but that combined with the underground detention facility, the use of gravity, which is an important consideration. I say this only because if you haven't paid a lot of attention to how storm drains and storm water works, you may not realize this, but road surfaces are often used as part of the storm drain system. It's called a conveyance. So even if you do not have underground, storm drains, even if you don't have gutters, still the road itself is often used as a way to convey water. And you might say, man, there's always water on the road when it rains. Yeah, it was built that way. Like, it's actually part of the system. So anyway, I know this is a little bit like a teaching lesson, I guess. But I thought what Patrick Haley said was very interesting. It's specifically something that's being proposed in Gulf Breeze and what they're working on. But I wanted you to hear it because I thought it was something we all probably ought to understand a little bit better, since obviously in this area, managing stormwater is a major issue. 6:55 on News Radio 92.3. PJ has traffic on the fives.
This service brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit KnoxPest.com. Knox knocks them out. I-10 and 110 are both flowing smooth right now. If you're on US 98 east and westbound through Gulf Breeze, that's looking good as well. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. If you need to get that next vehicle, Frontier Motors, not just they have a great selection of cars, right? Cars that are 1, 2, 3 years young, low miles, 10 to 30, 40,000 miles. Every late model car they warranty to 10 years or 100,000 miles. And that's true, okay? And I talk about the selection, and that's good. But really, it's how they treat you that makes them different. You know, a lot of times, and for me, every time I have ever dealt with a car or used car salesman, it's never good. It's always some degree of unpleasant, often very unpleasant. And I just didn't have that experience at Frontier. I had a good experience. I like my guys. Calvin was great. You know, I know Scott Ford over there real well. Monroe, you know, all those guys, they're really good guys. They treat you well. They're honest with you. They don't play the games. It's just designed to be the kind of place you're willing to come back again and again for future cars, which is their model. Don't sell one car. Sell you all the cars you're ever going to want to buy, because you're going to want to come back to them and do business. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for 29 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Did you know? Florida West Economic Development Alliance partners with local and state stakeholders to compete for companies that are considering Escambia County, the city of Pensacola, and the town of Century. These jobs, wages, and investment deliver real returns for our residents. These outcomes strengthen Escambia County's economy and protect taxpayer interests through disciplined, results-driven economic development. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 28th to Pensacola Beach. This is the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference. Get connected with top experts and explore the cutting-edge trends shaping our future. From AI to robotics to national security and healthcare tech. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Don't miss out. Secure your tickets today at itenwired.com.
You recognize the smell of marijuana, but it's not just a smell. It's a warning. If you can smell it, harmful chemicals are entering your lungs, bloodstream, and brain, and our children too. Every inhale affects brain development and triples the risk of serious respiratory issues. Protect your kids and grandkids from the dangers of marijuana. Their future is on the line. This message is sponsored by the Department of Children and Families and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
This isn't shouting.
It's conversation.
Hugh Hewitt, weekdays at 2 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
You know what I like best about trees?
I know what?
Oh, that you can lie under them on a moonlit night with the breeze blowing. Ball your brains out.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along.
The things we were allowed to watch as kids. Do you watch Cannonball Run as a kid?
I did.
You did. So there you go. 6:59 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Now, President Trump raising some questions about whether the U.S. would support Britain if there was a conflict over the Falkland Islands. When asked if America would come to Britain's aid, Trump avoided giving a direct answer, instead criticized Britain for not supporting the U.S. war with Iran. Of course, the U.S. has traditionally remained neutral on the islands, which are controlled by Britain, but claimed by Argentina. Perhaps not surprisingly, Argentine President Javier Milei welcomed the comments.
And we'll move on. That's literally all I can think of.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3.